Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Final hour of the program on Toby Los Vatos. No Steve Cofield today. He'll be back tomorrow. It's JVT and Willie. Coming up in about 20 minutes from now, Caleb Herring will be with us. We'll discuss NFL, UNLV football, Shedeur Sanders. When I talked to him 2 weeks ago, I asked him, and Griffin, this question will now be for you. I mean, Willie can answer it, but I don't think he has an answer for it. If he got the new college football, 26, whether it's PS5 and or Xbox, I am also very heavily considering buying Madden for the first time in 10 years or so. Did you get either?
I have not gotten either.
Okay.
Being financially responsible with myself for the first time when it comes to these freaking football video games.
I was going to say, I also don't really know if you're a gamer to that extent or not. So you are somebody who will purchase ever so often? You did get college football, didn't you? I believe
we talked about
this. Okay, all right.
Oh, yeah.
Last year is what I mean.
Right. Yearly, I usually will. It's been the same way since middle school, buying always Madden and then back in the day college football. And now today, I got last year's edition. Holding off a bit, I am going to purchase both. Originally, I was thinking I was only going to be buying college football 26, but apparently everything I'm hearing about this new Madden apparently has changed their ways.
It's getting me. The marketing and all the reviews, it's getting me. That is the reason why I am, to your point, everything I've heard about this is that it's different. And they have reskinned the same game for like the last 15 years, and I'm kind of in.
How do we believe them, though?
I don't know.
There's so much good positive reactions coming from this game, but again, every year it seems like we hear some kind of positive thing, some little positive note, little change where they're like, this is what's worth it. You should buy this game that, like you said, it's the same game from 2015 to 24. So the positivity I'm hearing from it, including close friends who have bought the video game, have bought both, positive reviews. They're even saying it's better than College Football 26.
Wow.
So, yeah,
really?
might have to do it.
Not a video guy. I'm not down on it. I just never gotten into it.
My problem is, as much as I enjoy these games, I find myself purchasing them and then never having time to actually play them enough.
That's the
so
problem.
It's a waste of my money in that. I will be able to sit down and play this. Like I was doing, I was calculating my schedule for my schedule for the upcoming football season. I will not have a day to myself for a very long time. And I'm not, trust me, I have a great job. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying, this is football season. It's a very busy time for all of us here in this business. And there's not going to be many times where I'm going to sit down, fire it up, and,
Well, not with Diego.
Knock out two or three more games.
When my son was your son's age, I wasn't involved. There was no pro teams.
Sure.
So there wasn't as many, I wasn't called upon as much. And a lot of my freelance stuff was restricted to online. I didn't have to go places. And he had Nintendo GameCube.
Hell yeah, brother.
And that was it. So I would play, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be a little vulnerable here and be up front. The other reason why, if I did have time, if I were to get a video game, like a sports video game, it'd be all sports. Like I wouldn't do the war games and the other thing with the car racing and the gang.
There's a lot of others.
Grand Theft Auto and the
there's war. A lot of other genres outside of it.
Right.
Don't strike me as a Dark Souls guy.
I would be straight athlete sports. And the thing is, if I sucked at them, I'd be pissed. So I wouldn't want to be bad at them. And then, so JVT's coming over. Someone's, the boys are coming over. Oh, let's play some Madden. And then I'm getting my – I'd be pissed.
Yeah, you just play them all the time. I remember getting my stepfather to play with me from time to time. And the day that he quit was the day that I dropped 135 points on him with USC.
You're disrespectful.
In NCAA.
You're disrespectful.
In NCAA 09. It was great. Absolutely great. We play with longer quarters, but you got this. Don't give up every single time. Absolutely brilliant. But, Willie's not one to back down from a challenge at all. So I can understand that. What is this Big Mac challenge?
Oh, yeah. We've been talking about this. Griffin and I've been telling Cofield – and then there was a week that he wasn't
here. Oh, I think
here.
I know what this is now. Go ahead.
And then I've been telling him, Kofi, I'm going to just get the approval from Q to bring food in here. It's the one-minute Big Mac challenge.
Yeah, eat a Big Mac in a minute.
Yeah.
I feel like that's somewhat doable.
It is. That's my only issue with it. I love Willie's premise for this, and I would love to get a challenge going in here. We get it on cameras, social media. You could all follow and watch it. But that's the problem, Willie, is that a Big Mac in a minute, and again, I'm a big guy. I could do like a, a Big Mac in a minute. It doesn't take me much longer to eat a Big Mac.
Here's the tricky part with the Big Mac challenge. First of all, it sounds like, yeah, no problem. But there is three pieces of bread. The problem is how many times have you gotten a Big Mac? And sometimes the consistency of the dough, the bun is a little tougher. So it may be a day old, a little more, not stale, but it's not as, so it has to be that really nice, steamy, cushiony bread, because the ones that I watch when they were popping up every day, everybody was doing them, celebrities were doing whatever. The ones that struggled the most were like, oh, this bread is hard. So you have to make sure that would be the only tricky part. Otherwise, I think I could do it.
I'll be perfectly honest, and this is not a I don't eat fast food thing, but I think I've ordered a Big Mac 5 times in my adult life. Mm. 3 of them were for my wife when she was pregnant, because she had like this big thing with Big Macs, and that's it. I actually
have not been in your entire life.
Yeah, I've never been a Big Mac. My McDonald's sandwich of choice was the QP.
Oh, I got you.
So I was never. It was never one that I ordered. Familiarity with the sandwich is very limited. But having watched those videos and knowing what the sandwich is, watching my wife house one in what I believe was less than a minute. I would probably say it is a doable feat. I'd probably be tighter to a minute. I don't think I'd blow through it in like 30 seconds.
The record I saw was a guy did it in 9 seconds.
Yeah, but I do think that is achievable within 60 seconds.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
I mean, my favorite of all time came out in the mid-80s was the McDLT. And it came,
is that the one with the separates? They came in separate sides.
With the styrofoam, yeah. Yeah. So it was hot and cold, and then you could, yeah. And the key to that was that they had to make it fresh.
Correct. What year was that?
I want to say it was like 86, 87, because we were ordering that at the Boulevard Mall. That was the go-to when we were working at the Athlete's Foot. So I remember those years. That's when I worked there.
So the only reason I really know about that is I still would say to this day one of the better docu-series ever created were those VH1, I Love the 90s, I Love the 80s, I Love the 70s. I watched all of those.
Nice.
They were very good. But they did, part of the episode was, what is it again?
McDLT.
Why DLT?
DLT.
Yeah, no, why DLT? What is the?
I just think because McDonald's, and then so the LT was.
Oh, lettuce and tomato. Yeah, got it. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you're a very healthy man. I'm not concerned about your health.
I don't remember the last time that I had McDonald's. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say I don't remember the last time I had fast food, because we just read our good friend Matt Heumann's list of 50, and there's places that he put on there. And we had this conversation with Cofield, by the way. We argued whether donuts, and I think he ruled out donuts. So, by the way, I was right.
Ewan's not a sweets guy. Yeah.
He's not? No. Yeah. But anyway, there are places that he put on there that he considered fast food. And there are places that I consider that I guess you could call fast food. But the point is,
Chipotle, I think, would be considered fast food.
You do?
Yes.
See, I don't because
I went to Chipotle today, and I got my food within 45 seconds.
Like that place. Only because there's a place that does the exact same thing, and I can literally taste
the dopes,
the cleaner ingredients in how they prepare it. And meaning, if you're going to get the chicken, I could taste the fact that it's been sitting in the oils or whatever, and where the other place is not, which is Zabba's.
Oh, Zabba's, yeah.
I love Zabba's.
Very good. Very solid. Very health conscious, man.
I know where Griffin's going for dinner tonight. Now,
not concerned about Willie in terms of health. I will say, I threw this in last
I am excited.
Minute.
You're stepping on my transition for a third time now.
Let's go.
No, go.
I'm concerned about the health of Matthew Stafford is what I was trying to say. Did you see the news today?
I heard the news, but you have to refresh
my memory. I wanted to bring this up because this was something that talked about earlier today, but I completely forgot to include this. Mm. This is a massive story in the NFL. Yeah. We have to ask Caleb about this. So Matthew Stafford's been dealing with his back injury, the disc issue.
Mm-hmm.
For those who didn't see the news last week, he had to go get an epidural for this. Now, I watched my wonderful, strong, beautiful wife give birth twice, and she got an epidural both times. That kills pain. That does nothing to heal. It's a pain blocker mask or whatever. Yeah. It is not like some of these other TRT, whatever it is, like these platelet rich injections which promote healing, if you will, or at least the belief is that they do. It's just to mask the pain.
That's it.
So when I saw that last week, I was like, well, that's troubling, because if you're getting an epidural and you're not even practicing, where are we at now? You get news that he's, you know, kind of maybe getting second opportunity, second referrals and analysis from maybe back surgeons around the country. That's not really great. Then we get the news, though. It's like, hey, man, no, everything's fine. He's going to be back at practice on Monday. Cool. Well, today's Monday. Guess who wasn't at practice? Matthew Stafford. Now, I think a lot of people would say, well, what's the big deal? That's fine. Here's why I think you should be worried. Reportedly, over the weekend, went through a workout in which he threw 60 passes. And then on Monday, the day he's slated to come back, he's in street clothes and can't play. Put two and two together, I'm going to speculate that maybe there was a minor setback after throwing 60 passes over the weekend, and that Matthew Stafford's got a real issue with this back for a Rams team that is considered by many in both the betting space and in just the general NFL space to be a contender in the NFC. This is huge.
Would you say that, and it was, wasn't it, they even said what it was, right? It has to do with this disc?
Yes.
Okay. Would you say that the NHL and the NFL are similar in terms of it's a contact sport and there's heavy hitting constantly?
I would say the level of physicality that you experience on a given hit in the NFL is more physical than in the NHL, but I understand what you're saying.
Every time this Matthew Stafford story has come up, all I think about is Mark Stone.
Sure.
Twice. Two surgeries.
Mm-hmm.
Not good when you're talking about a back and you're talking about a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
A quarterback's back. His disc. And now he's showing up in street clothes? You're right. It's not good. Because even just throwing the passes, right? Let's say he got through it. And then you have treatment. At the very least, he could be out there maybe working out or stretching, just going through it, doing his own thing, little cart, ride the bike, whatever it may be today. Nothing. It's troublesome. It's problematic. It's definitely a concern.
Yes. Left tackle, Alaric Jackson, is also dealing with, I believe it's blood clots, making his way back. His status for week one is also a question. So even, let's just say Stafford, who is a man who has dealt with many injuries in his past, who, let's say he guts it out and he tries to play through this thing. First off, effectiveness with a back issue is always a question. And then you might be rolling into a week one matchup with your back issue, without your blindside protector, which is a very big deal. I mean, again, I bring this up because this is a team that is thought to be, everybody will remember the final score and the final drive against the Eagles from last year in the playoffs. It was a much more lopsided contest than what the final score and the final drive would indicate. The Eagles controlled that entire game, whatever. I think a lot of people invoke that as a reason as to why the Rams, as well as the additions of Davante Adams, the very burgeoning, fledgling, solid, strong defense that they have as well. There's reasons to like this team. But you look around and you're like, hey, man, look, we got news today. Brandon Ayuk, maybe week 60 comes back, but the 49ers should be more healthy in general when you're talking about, especially defensively, Robert Saleh coming back. They should be more formidable. The Arizona Cardinals spent an entire offseason loading that defense up. Sorry, LaMelo Ball. And just absolutely adding piece by piece by piece by piece by piece to that defense to make it better. And we'll see what Kyler Murray is when we get to this offseason. I think there's a reality in which we're looking at this Rams team. Jimmy Garoppolo starts 5, 6, 7 games, God forbid. How far down does it slide?
Am I alone here in that every time, the other thing with Matthew Stafford, that like just tomorrow, if I hear it again, I'll be like, what? It doesn't seem like Matthew Stafford is 37 years old.
He's older or younger?
That he's 37. Like, to me, that's wild to hear. I just don't think that, like, I don't put him and being that old together. So being 37 on top of that is, you know, that's, you're not healing as quickly. The recovery is different when you're dealing with a back injury. And I just think that that's also, and here's the thing. It just would have never have dawned on me when I heard that, when they first started talking about a few weeks ago, with his back and then the epidural, and then they just would, you know, say, let's not forget, he's 37. Like, think about it. I mean, you think of Matthew Stafford, you think of the Lions, and then the whole him to L.A., the Goff to Detroit. Like, I still don't put it together. Maybe it's just because the influx of quarterbacks and other storylines and whatnot, but it just doesn't seem like he's been in the league that long. It just it's shocking to me sometimes to hear that that's his age. So with that, That's another hurdle when you're that old as a quarterback of an NFL team to overcome that injury.
You know what's trippy to me? So he's 37?
Yeah.
He's only 2.5 years older than me.
And we
talk about him in these – no, but we just it's always trippy when you talk about these guys in these decrepit terms, right? Because,
right.
Again, like they've been playing in their early 20s. He was the number one overall pick. He's been playing for a long time.
Right.
But in football years, he is a old, decrepit man.
Football years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like he is.
What would that be? So dog years is like his 7. So what would we say?
He's 60.
Yeah.
He's 60.
He's 60 years old. He's on hospice. He's
– right.
I see, for example, like a long in the tooth guy. I am a month younger than Geno Smith. He was born on October 10th. I was born on November 11th, both of us in 1990. So I'm like, I'm right behind a Geno Smith.
So 1.5 years of your if you're a quarterback in the NFL, your football age is 1.5 years of what you are.
Is that what it is?
Well, 37 divided by 2, 18 to 37 would make him 55, basically.
Nice.
You said 60.
Yeah, point with I'm with I believe Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes. We're at the midlife crisis age in the NFL.
So in football years, boys, I am 84.
Yeah, no, you're dead. You've gone. You've gone to the great beyond. You're cooked. We've stuck a fork in you a long time ago.
Kudos.
By the way, so speaking of Geno Smith, what happened over the weekend? It was Thursday.
Yeah.
But Friday is really when these images started to pop up of him throwing up the double birds, as well as Max Crosby, ride or die, throwing up the double birds to a fan. The sign said he's a bigger bust than Jamarcus Russell? Am I remembering?
No, no, no. The sign read, bigger bust, Geno or Jamarcus Russell.
Okay.
So
here's the thing. Before you go, because I feel like you're very much reading between the lines of our notes together. I think you're on the side of no big deal, you're flipping the double birds. I think this is a huge deal, but maybe not for the reason of, what about the kids? Geno, you're in Las Vegas now, so I hope you hear me, okay? Geno, you're better than Jamarcus Russell. There is no question about that dynamic in any way, shape, or form. If anybody were to ask that question, have they a shred of football knowledge? They would be laughed out of whatever room they were in. Why does this bother you? Why does that elicit that response? That, to me, is my question. You are clearly better than Jamarcus Russell. You are clearly, career-wise, having a better career given the expectations.
You can retire today. Yes, I get it.
I don't understand why elicited such a response. That's why I think it's a big deal. Do we have to talk to Geno? Do we have to give him a confidence boost?
Well, I will tell you this. In the group text with the Raiders media, this didn't come up, but it came up like, I know we got to get Geno to the podium because it's always asked at the beginning of the week. Here's the schedule. This is what's coming. Blah, blah, blah. What are you getting? So I think we get Geno and Pete Wednesday.
You got to ask. You're going to go, right?
I'll be there Wednesday.
You have to frame it in this way.
I'm assuming that I know the order of questioning. I'm pretty far down the totem pole. It'll be asked before it gets to me.
You know, I'm going to pull some strings. I'm showing up.
I just hope our guy Adam gets to ask the question.
I'm pulling some strings and I'm showing up.
Yeah.
And I'm going to – Geno.
There's no pulling strings. We'll get to
Geno, my guy.
Yeah.
You don't need to feel like that. Jamarcus Russell. Like, he's probably a great guy. I don't know. But it's Jamarcus Russell, my man. You're a longtime NFL vet who's got, like, completion percentage records, does he not? Who's made a lot of money, who has revitalized his career, who's one of the main reasons why many people think the Raiders could be an upstart group of fighters this year. There's no need for that to even cross your mind as offensive.
So here was my reasoning for putting no big deal in. It's weird how I've really become this anti-fan guy, and I can't believe it.
Fans suck. Continue.
That's why. That's my no big deal, is the fact that people are in an uproar, and then Max Crosby gave the same gesture, and he explained it on his podcast, Definition of Riding for Your QB, is fans have become this – we talked about entitlement earlier this show in terms of athletes, and we talked about Shador and fans have become so entitled because of social media that the things that they can think that they can get away with pro athletes these days, that you know what, if an athlete feels disrespected to this point, and I get what you're saying. Like, he shouldn't be. I agree with you. Like, he shouldn't get. He shouldn't feel like that's a threatening. But
yes.
But what I'm saying is no big deal. Is everyone that's coming after them for what they did? Shut up. It's no big deal. To me, that's not the big. That's what I meant.
Yes. No,
that's what I meant.
But I'll say this to my guy Gino. So I'm gonna show you something here. I don't know if you remember this at all. This is a couple years ago. When Bradley Beal was with the Washington Wizards, mm-hmm. they were on the road playing the Denver Nuggets. And mm-hmm. as he was walking to the tunnel, mm-hmm. a fan tells him, Bradley Beal, you suck. Bradley Beal makes this face at him. I am showing you this image. It is hands on the hips,
yeah.
looking at the fan like, really, dude, I suck.
Yeah.
That's the confidence you should have when that fan throws that sign at you.
I got to push back a little bit. I got to push back because I got this theory with Gino. Okay. All right. I don't think it was a moment of, you know, having low confidence. I think it's the opposite. Because what we're seeing a transformation of Smith. First few years, you know, obviously he's going up and down, going over the Jets and mm-hmm. kind of bouncing everywhere. You don't really hear much from him outside of a report that his jaw has been broken by a teammate.
Correct.
But then he goes to Seattle. He gets that victory. They get him on the mic. They say, what do you got to say after this great performance, great victory? You know, they wrote me off. I didn't write back. That was the first big, Geno Smith saying that, dropping a line like that, crazy. Then he comes over to the Raiders. They sign him to a nice big extension. Then we see a video come out, him at a, 7-on-7 tournament, getting real hyped up, screaming on the sidelines.
He's coaching.
Coaching. Right. He's on the sidelines screaming. That's why they pay me the big bucks. That's why they bring the big bucks to me. So now we have this situation with him flipping off Seattle fans in Seattle. And I think it's just a matter of this is the new Geno. This is who he is now. He's not your Patrick Mahomes is going to get up there and say the, you know, very political answer. He's going to go up there and he's going to tell you how he feels. He's going to tell you where everybody's wrong about him. And he's going to tell you what he plans on doing to prove that he's better than what everyone's saying.
Let's tie this all together. Let's ask a quarterback about his confidence, a quarterback who I played with in NCAA football and led him to a Poinsettia Bowl, and he still owes it to me. Caleb Herring joins us next.
Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, so I just invoked this. We have to ask Caleb about this because I have told him this before. Caleb Herring, UNLV football analyst with us here on the Horn. Obviously, Caleb, College Football 26 is out. College 25 came out last year. The last iteration of the game before the hiatus was NCAA Football 14, which you were part of, which I led you to a Poinsettia Bowl. You're welcome. But you were part of that game, correct? Or at least your likeness was part of that game.
I think I my likeness, I guess, kind of, my jersey number, I believe if I remember right, I had dreads in that game.
You did.
For whatever reason, just to kind of throw things off so it wasn't my exact name, image, and likeness. That's how they dodged the potential for a lawsuit there, I guess. But no, thanks, Coach John. I appreciate it. Did we win the bowl game or did we lose the bowl game?
We won, and then I left. Oddly enough, I left to be the offensive coordinator for Alabama the next year, so.
Jesus, you traitor. My goodness, what's wrong with you?
It's also, it speaks to where the program was at the point where they were like, dear God, you let UNLV football to a Poinsettia Bowl victory in 10 wins? Alabama's offensive coordinator job's all yours, buddy.
I mean, I guess it kind of mirrors reality a little bit with, I don't know if you make that jump necessarily that we were doing bad in the program when Barry Odom left, but he jumped to Purdue really quickly, rather quickly after some success here, so. We were in the dumps for a little bit on that bowl drought, and he broke through, and it does pan out. You do go on to get, I guess, higher jobs, if that's how you want to look at the ladder.
So I did a great job building team camaraderie when I was leading that UNLV squad. A lot of team outings, right? Made sure everybody liked each other. Wanted the chemistry to be very high. For this group of guys for UNLV, a lot of new faces, all kind of coming in. Somewhat of a mercenary-esque feel to it. How important is that dynamic when you're talking about this team, vibes, chemistry, all of that coming together in a short window?
I think it's really important. I think that's the one question mark that I have about this roster going into it. You mentioned it, 70 new players coming into the Rebel football program, which is massive turnover. It's almost becoming kind of the standard where guys are teams are basically flipping the roster through the transfer portal or in recruitment. So each year, the teams can look completely different, and sometimes that could be problematic. You try to eliminate some of the chemistry issues in recruiting and recruit guys that personality-wise mesh a little bit. You'd like to get guys in big recruiting classes on their official visits, so that way they have some sort of relationship to start from when they do get into town. But it's tough, and we talked about it last week a little bit, that Dan Mullen is aware of that hurdle that he's going to have to get over. He's recruited well. He's got the talent in it. On paper, they look great. But getting the chemistry together so guys are working well in between the lines as a team, I think, is a big step. And he knows that things like trying to see what they can do to get out of town for fall camp in the future, because I think those things do help with team building and all that stuff. When we used to go up to Ely, that was crucial to our team building and chemistry. They've done things here in town, like going on bowling nights. They've had, I think recently they went out to Hibachi Grill as a team and probably packed the place out. But those kind of bonding experiences go a long way towards building the chemistry, so that when you're in the trenches with the guys, you trust them as your brothers in the battle and not some strangers that you just play and pick up ball with at the rec.
How deep does team chemistry go? Like, it's obviously a very big roster, and I would assume you're going to have chemistry with your position group to an extent, but how far out does that go? Is that just sides of the ball? You know, should a defensive lineman's chemistry with a quarterback actually matter? Like, how deep on the roster should chemistry actually matter for team synergy?
Well, I think it does start in position groups, and it kind of builds out from there as you overlap with the other position groups. And it all comes, on, at least from the offensive side, I'll speak to that, with your knowledge of the entirety of the offense. Sure. And that's kind of where you can start building that chemistry, or where it matters the most, where my job as a quarterback interacts with everybody, right? So I know what the receivers are doing. I know what the O-line's doing, what the running backs, et cetera. So it's easier for me as a quarterback to bond with everybody as it kind of grows out. But for some of these position groups, are kind of isolated, where it's just your job, like a receiver, for instance. This is why they probably get the diva mantra, because they're just out there on the edges by themselves doing whatever they want to do. At least that's what it looks like. But those interactions, those opportunities to engage with other position groups do come along, and I think it starts with knowledge of the overall playbook. Once you start to grasp the whole concept of who's supposed to be doing what, then you can, one, hold each other accountable to it, and then kind of mesh off of, I know what he's going through over there, so I can communicate and help him out where I can. So, and then as far as offense versus defense, I think the chemistry builds through healthy competition. And there's no other way to, especially when camp is in the dog days of camp and it kind of sucks here in the thick of it. That competition, I think, is good if you take it the wrong way. And that's individual maturity. But going to battle against an opponent for so long, you get this kind of respect for them, and you respect what they do on the opposite side. And that sort of frenemies sort of relationship is how that starts. And then instantly, once you get a different opponent and your first game of the season, you're like, okay, now let's unite and make it hell for the opponent. And that builds chemistry to another level there. So there's a lot of different nuance that goes into it, but it definitely starts at the position group.
I would imagine, Caleb, that just as important as position groups and then intertwining those position groups when you're talking about bonding, when a first-year staff is taking over, it's just as important for that coach to get in with the entire team or those individual coaches. And then to get even deeper, the quarterback, the leader of the team, and in this case there's a battle for the starting spot, you know, to sort of bond. There has to be a fine line between bonding and building a relationship but also keeping it coach and player.
There is, and that's one of the things I envy about coaching. And it's as similar to parenting as I'm going through now and you've gone through and JVT has gone through as well, where you want to be cool and you want to be liked, but then every now and then, or maybe even more of the time, you have to be disciplinarian and stern because you're trying to teach or coach something. And I think that's a fine line to walk. And some of the best position coaches that I've been around in my past, Coach Say Kermir is one that comes to mind when I was at UNLV, who are the glue. They're the almost the intermediary, where the players trust them enough and respect them enough, but also are cool enough, quote-unquote cool enough, to hear those hard messages, right? Like sometimes you're getting chewed out by a coach and all you see is this coach hates me. But some coaches are able to break that barrier and be able to coach you hard, but you always, as a player, feel the love and feel that they're trying to push you forward to be better. and some of the best position coaches I've known. Kamir, like I mentioned, Dell Alexander on the current staff is one of those guys who was a holdover. Akeem Davis, everybody spoke highly of their relationship with the players, and that's a big part, in my estimation, of why Dan Mullen kept those guys around, because they are that bridge, and he knows he can use them as sort of a cheat sheet on how to create that connection with players in short order with a quick turnaround with the staff and the roster.
Caleb Herring with us discussing UNLV football, a little bit of chemistry. I want to get your thoughts on Shedeur Sanders before we move off UNLV football, though. In the category of receiving votes for the AP Top 25 poll, I believe technically, what are they, 36th, somewhere in that range? Were you surprised? Should they be higher? Should they be lower? What'd you make of their place in the poll?
I'm not surprised necessarily. I did think I don't know what the record is. I'll have to consult with Mark Wallington, my resident expert on all things UNLV football record related. I don't know what the highest that they've been ranked in the preseason AP poll has been in the past. I would imagine that that's pretty high, at least near the top of their AP poll preseason rankings. But, and then I looked at some of the teams that they were ahead of, and I was like, whoa, that's pretty impressive. Respect. It's UNLV getting respect. Is it the level of respect that they deserve? I think there's an opportunity for them to climb even higher early in the season, really quickly, if they come out and handle business in the first few games. But I do think that was an interesting note. Boise is in the top 25, and that's kind of been my measuring stick for UNLV, because I think those two teams, although Boise's had the best of UNLV in the past couple of years, I think they're right on par with each other. And we could have a setup for the finish of the year being similar to last year, where those two teams are the group of five representative, or at least fighting for that representation in the playoffs. So we'll see. But yeah, it's good news for me. I'll take it. 35 and looking to climb.
And the one team that I don't see in the top 25 or in receiving votes is the one team in which everyone is saying, oh, UNLV's got an early test. UCLA is nowhere to be found.
Yeah. That's interesting, and I think it's more because of UCLA's record last year and kind of the way that program went directionally with the conference change. The Big Ten, you look at their schedule, they played a brutal schedule. It's not like getting 6 or 7 wins in the Big Ten is an easy accomplishment. So the fact that they came up short of bowl eligibility, I think is playing a big part in that. And then also there's some shuffling and changes. Who knows if there's a bad taste because of the new quarterback they got from Tennessee. And it's like, I don't know necessarily how that's going to work out. But I wouldn't take that they're not above UNLV in the rankings or anything like that as a sign that they're a weaker opponent or somebody that you can fall asleep on by any means. Obviously, the Big Ten competition, Big Ten level of players and physicality, formerly Pac-12, obviously. But we know UCLA has the ability with the resources to retool really quickly. So I wouldn't be surprised if this year's UCLA team was a lot different than what we saw from them last year.
All right. I would love to get your thoughts. I'm not going to lead the witness, so I'll just say Shedeur Sanders' debut. What did you think?
He should be in the running for MVP. I want the odds for him to be league MVP by the end of the year. I'm being facetious, but that's based on the amount of coverage and the reactions to what he did in a preseason game. I don't know the exact percentage. I'm going to say he played well. He played extremely well. The things I saw from him were what I knew he could do and why I anticipated him to be a late first round, maybe early second round draft pick. Obviously, we know about the slide and what happened with that, how he became sort of the story of the offseason and not Cam Ward, who also had a really good debut for a rookie quarterback. But Shedeur played well. I think he did some things that I was really happy to see. Some of his throws, I think his best throw of the day was from his own end zone. He threw a dig route with so much anticipation, pocket movement, under pressure, and an accurate strike downfield. I think it was a third down conversion as well. So some highlights for sure. I think there's a couple of plays where I would like to see him make better decisions, and namely the scrambles where he was running around losing 20 yards. It's just, you can't take that kind of risk in the pros. But those kind of things were good. So I think he's a professional player, and I wouldn't be surprised by the end of the year if he continues to progress, if he ends up being the starter for the Browns, and maybe that might be the best option for them.
Speaking with Caleb Herring, former UNLV quarterback and, of course, commentator for UNLV football, season right around the corner. All right, Raiders preseason, Ashton Jeanty, is he a bust?
Absolutely. What are you talking? Three rushes for negative yardage? What are we doing here?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're hearing, right? What do we do wasting that pick on Ashton Jeanty?
Right. I'm being really facetious today, I guess. But no, a lot of people were reacting to his opening performance. Didn't get very many reps, obviously. But this, I will say that what I saw was this is the risky run by drafting any skill position high when you haven't built the foundation of a roster yet. I think there's opportunities to take high picks, quarterbacks or running backs, especially in the case of a running back, when the talent is there, you can't ignore it. I do think Ashton Jenny was one of those guys where you can't ignore that talent if you have a position of need. So taking him, I don't blame. But the offensive line questions will always show their face. Whether or not you got a great quarterback, a great receiver, a great running back, if the offensive line hasn't been built up properly, then it does feel like you kind of prioritized wrong when you're talking about roster construction. So I think it's too early to say that that's the case now. It's a small sample size, but you do need to build the offensive line. And certain teams have shown that you can do that and have success regardless of who's back there at running back. And I think Ashton Jeanty, from the performance the offensive line put out there in the first preseason game, small sample size, I know it's not the end of the world, but he's going to have an uphill battle if he wants to be the kind of impact player that he plans to be in his rookie year.
You know, I've been kind of adamant, like, there is a scale to this, right? And what I mean by that is there's a lot of people that will just say, Caleb, well, it's the preseason, doesn't really matter. But it is football, and you are playing your position, and you are being asked to do the things that your position demands. We can take some things from this, right? Like, for example, my takeaway for Shador was he deserves to compete for the two and the one reps in practice with the Cleveland Browns. He deserves to be ahead of Dylan Gabriel. There are some struggles to his game, but we saw some of that. What do you take away for preseason? Because there has to be something with tangible game film now for these guys.
Yeah, I think the first thing you take from it is the procedural stuff, especially when you're talking about quarterback. How quickly can you get him out of the huddle? How comfortable do you look with changing plays, reading coverages, and things like that? So it's really apparent at quarterback position, regardless. If you're out of sorts, that shows. You can take that from it. Obviously, the execution of plays, if there's a play there to be made, you should make it, regardless of when it is. And you look at guys like Joe Burrow, for instance, it's a preseason game, and nobody's going to say, oh, he's the MVP because of that preseason game, but it was a clean, efficient performance. And anytime you see that, from any position group where there's no mental errors, there's no procedural stuff that goes wrong, you can grade that, obviously, and take great value from that. But then, like you said, I think going back to the Brown situation quickly, Shador Sanders, I'm starting to lean into the conspiracy theory that the Browns know what they're doing. And Shador's been taking reps against the one defense in order to improve and enhance his game, because I think he's gotten better for it. And I think their master plan is to, like, pull a fast one on the entire league and prop Shador up as this valuable piece, whether he starts for them or not, and be tradable. But that's conspiracy theory 101. So I'm not going to go down there. But preseason definitely shows you some things. It shows you some deficiency. It shows you, importantly, where the areas of competition are as a roster management thing. If yeah, my ones are solid, if you look at a team like Baltimore, like you have a stacked one roster, but then you look at the depth that gets an opportunity during preseason, you're like, well, if anybody, we're one injury away, based on what I'm seeing from my twos and threes here. So I think there's definitely value. Executing football is tough no matter who's out there. And at the level of NFL, these guys are all professional. I don't care what anybody says. Everybody on the field is good at football. So you can definitely get value from going against that competition.
Caleb Herring, UNLV football analyst, former UNLV quarterback as well. Caleb, always good to talk to you, buddy. Thank you.
No, guys, take care. Have a good one. Here comes football, baby.
Yep, that's right. Like we talked about, school started today. Fall's here, man. Fall is 100% here. Football season's right around the corner. All right, giveaway time, 702-364-1100, 702-364-1100. Let's give away a couple of things here, what we have. First off, let's start with, everything's moved around on me here, two tickets to the ESPN Zone, Aces and Dream. Aces are hot. Can they make their way in, and can they be a threat? Go see for yourself Tuesday, August 19th, 7 p.m. We got two tickets, caller number 7, 702-364-1100. You get to go down to Michelob Ultra Arena, thanks to West Star Credit Union and Richard Harris Law Firm. Go to tickets at AXS.com. But you don't get those. You also get two tickets to qualify to win $200 in card show bucks. Front Row Card Show, August 16th to the 17th at the Rio. 550 tables of cards, comics, and collectibles. I might steal these from you. Get tickets to Front Row Card Show. Hard ticket pickup at the station, 702-364-1100. For those, we'll do caller number 13.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
Last couple of minutes. Steve Cofield will be back tomorrow. Big thanks to everybody who joined the program today. Man, there's a lot going on today. A lot to unpack. Breast milk ice cream.
I saw that on it. I had to include it. I've been putting it on the rundown. They're sending it in for I don't know how long now, but I saw that. It was, and it's packaged. It's actually, this isn't like some gimmick thing. Like it looks like it's in packaged, processed.
Yeah, I would
containers.
Assume it's for babies.
No.
Okay.
It's just ice cream made with breast milk.
Who wants that? Who's demanding that?
I didn't go. It looked like it was an advertising video, and I immediately added. And I've been carrying it over to rundown, and then
I'm giving you your time to shine. You have no information on it.
There's no information. I didn't research. I just saw the video, and I thought it was. So I said, let's put it on one day. And it might have been a day where there was a national day or something that we talked about. And I was like, would somebody try that? And then it never came up. But I mean, the fact that it's supposed to be the healthiest. Did Diego nurse?
It's an oddly personal question, but no.
It's really not.
It is, depending on who you ask.
I mean, people out here looking for a real freaky bowl of Fruit Loops. Maybe they want a little extra spice in there, you know what I mean?
See, now, I think it's different if you can go buy cartons of breast milk and pour it into your cereal.
That's weird.
As opposed to ice cream that's made from it. I don't know. I would try it.
We are at the peak of culinary innovation. Have you seen this? I'm sure this is real. Sliced mayonnaise.
No, I'm out.
So it comes in a package much like cheese, and it is mayonnaise slices.
Mm-mm.
That you can just place upon your sandwich.
I'm out.
And eat.
Food is just getting less and less appetizing. Like, that is the worst thing I think I've ever heard in my life.
I mean, there are a lot of people freaking out because, was it Bill Gates' people that, like, made some sort of, they made butter without using anything like dairy or like organic or something like that. And it's like authentic butter, but without any of the organic materials to it.
I mean,
so isn't that,
no, it's not. It's different from, like, you know, margarine or whatever.
No. What is it?
Can't believe that ain't butter.
No. I can't think of the form of butter, the purified form of butter, and it's supposed to be like if you have a
clarified butter.
It's clarified butter, but there's a word. It'll mess your stomach up if you're.
Well, no, this is like purely 100% like synthetic butter, like made from whatever the depths of hell, some would say. Damn, we're out of time.
Ghee.
It's not. Yeah, it's not ghee. No. Okay. Yeah. That I still think has like some naturally organic compounds to it. Mm. This is like 100% made in the lab.
Oh.
And it's butter. Hell yeah, brother.
I'm very traditional. If the food needs to be served to me in a way that I've been used to. I cannot get on board with a burger and there's a slice of mayonnaise on my burger. I'll freak out.
You know what I have read lately because of an old man account on TikTok called Granddad Joe? It's like from abroad. And he cooks with lard. Mm. So I started reading up. Apparently, lard is very healthy to cook with, healthier than oils and butter. So I bought some.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It's all stereotypes of the past, Willie. It makes you think the things that are really not true. Same thing with MSG. That's a whole other thing.
We talked so much about Little League, we didn't get to one of the best topics that I knew and was so proud to bring on with you.
Wait, do we get in the bag? Is that a thing? Yeah.
Stick your hand in there, dude.
What's that? Because I have one thing for you.
Go ahead.
Kelsey Plum's the thug.
That was I love Kelsey Plum, but that was a dirty move last night. I'm very disappointed in her.
I'm going to say it. I kind of don't like her.
Oh, I do. I
kind of don't like her.
Really?
She talks a lot.
She's evolved into. She's the new Diana Taurasi.
Nah, she's not that good.
I like her more than Diana Taurasi.
The character.
But Taurasi got to get away with it because she was good. She's not that good.
Diana grew into being, well, okay. That's fine. I mean, you can have your opinion. I like Kelce, but I'm very disappointed with last night's move. That was a dirty move. I agree. 100%. She should be suspended for a few games.
People are calling for it. She probably
bad.
Won't be.
It was bad.
Because WNBA is too.
Because there was no, like, I was trying to move over. Right. No, she that was bad. It was very bad.
The WNBA is too cowardly to suspend her.
It's to suspend anybody.
Do it now. I refuse to watch another game.
Oh my goodness.
Until Kelce Plum is suspended.
And
for
I will,
her actions.
And I'll stop watching the games if Kelce Plum isn't featured. I love Plum Dog. Sorry, I had to get it in there.
Wow, what is this?